Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. We are in week 36, we just passed Labor Day and it was very nice and warm out again. Traditionally the season slows down now, less tourists, but I think if you take advantage of the fall program ahead, you will enjoy Lake Life also this fall season. There's some events that I want to share. This past weekend I was at the opening of the extension for the Virgus Trail on Long Lake. You want to check that out, that's really a nice walk. Very beautiful along Long Lake there to the west of Virgus. And stay tuned also, I have Moriah Roofer with me today from the RMB Lake Monitoring Program, and we learn about water clarity and the program where you can research your own lake or your favorite lakes in the area, maybe some that you fish or want to see or check out. Really interesting interview. Some news here. A new handicapped accessible fishing pier for Pomme de Terre Lake. Thanks to the Elbow Lake Lions Club, a new handicap accessible fishing pier will be built in the spring of 2018 on Pomme de Terre Lake at the Tipsina Mounds Campground and Park. There was a 50-50 grant awarded to the Lions Club, which the club will match then as well. The pier will be a T shape and 48 feet long with cuts in the railing for those in wheelchairs. There's a full article we shared in the Fergus Falls Journal. You can go to our website, lakelifeweekend.com, to read more. We have a new mountain bike trail in progress in Fergus Falls area. The Ferber Park trails in Fergus Falls are nearing completion. The mountain bike trails run in an area known at the Norgren Junkyard, and all summer long volunteers have been out there trying to finish the trails. The trail is made up of two loops, one for beginners and one for more advanced riders. Also, full article on the Fergus Falls Journal, and we have a link for you on our website. Some events. Tour de Lake bike race September 7th, that is Thursday, 6 p.m. through 8:30 p.m. Detroit Lakes Pavilion is the meeting point, and it's an event to enjoy the Detroit Lake in the fall evening. There are two options available. There's a full marathon length bike race and then a half marathon length bike race, and the course will be the same one used for the Dick Beardsley races coming up this weekend as well. Toast to Tamarack, we heard about that with Penny when she was in our interview from the Richwood Winery. That is September 8th, Friday, 4 p.m. through 8 p.m. at the Richwood Winery. Toast of Tamarack is a fundraiser for the Friends of Tamarack, and there will be a wine tasting, live music with Dave Ferreira Trio, appetizers, silent auction, games, and a raffle drawing at 7 p.m. Then this Saturday, there's the Dick Beardsley Marathon from 5:30 a.m. through noon. There's all details on our website with a link. Please drive there. And again, the Grape Stomp at Richwood Winery event September 9th as well, 1 p.m. through 7 p.m. We heard about that. That's the 6th annual Grape Stomp at Richwood Winery event. All details on the website. You find a link on lakelifeweekend.com. And we have a cruise to the pit night, September 11th, 5 p.m. through 9 p.m. A car show and shine to start off your week at pit 611. I'm sorry. Music on the patio. First 25 cars receive a drink token. That's on Highway 11. That must be Monday, 5 p.m. through 9 p.m. Check our website for a link. And I don't want to hold this here from our interview to learn about the RMB Lake Water Program, monitoring program. You have a great week ahead and thank you for tuning in. All details on our website, and feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com with questions, concerns, or if you want to share something with us in our podcast. Thank you. Welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm here with Moriah Roofer of RMB Environmental Laboratories, and we will be speaking about their lake water monitoring program. But before we dive into the water subject, please, Mariah, welcome and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Well, I grew up in Minnesota and actually grew up going to a lake cabin on Leech Lake, which is over by Walker, Minnesota.
Yeah. Big lake.
Yeah, one of the third largest in the state, I think. Yeah. So that just, I just fell in love with lakes and being on the lake and water. And all through college, I just was interested in biology. And so I ended up putting that together for a career in lake water quality.
And you have a degree in biology?
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in biology and then a master's degree in even more specific water quality in lakes and water quality indicators, like the creatures that live in the lakes, like the water bugs, the crayfish, the leeches even.
Oh.
All of those can tell you about the water quality of the lake.
Okay. And I learned that you have been with RMB here in Detroit Lakes for the past 10 years already?
Yes, 10 years.
10 years. Congratulations, I guess.
Anniversary. Yes, thank you.
And we are going to talk about the monitoring program, which has been initiated 20 years ago, and you spearhead that for the past 10 years. But tell us a little bit more about RMB Environmental Laboratories. They are a water testing company. What do they do?
Yeah, it was started by Bob Borash, the owner, 20 years ago. Well, actually 22 years ago now, in Detroit Lakes. And we test all sorts of water. So the lab can test any kind of water, drinking water from the ground, wastewater, different industry effluents, lakes, streams. So really any kind of water.
And so you get samples? And mm-hmm. then you filter the contents.
Yep.
What are the main? Yeah, exactly. What do you do main, like, laboratory?
Yeah. So it's really a water chemistry laboratory. So people bring a water sample in a bottle, and then we have several different machines that are analyzing what's in that water and measuring the different levels.
Huh.
And then we report it to clients, and one thing we really like to make sure of too is to make sure and explain what the results mean to people.
Yeah, and I'm always fascinated to how they get out, even if I get tested for blood, how do they get the example or like the sample out of it? So I'm not going to ask you how you find out how much lead is in water or how many arsenic, how much, I guess, but maybe let's talk about a little bit, because we live rural here at times, not a lot, or on a lake, and we have wells. Yeah, the well concept is pretty new to me. I'm coming from a metropolitan area, and a well doesn't exist there. But a lot of people have a well. I today have a well,
mm-hmm.
and I tested it actually just recently last year, and the arsenic level was high.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe tell us a little bit about the elements that could be in it and what that means. We have, I guess, iron content. It affects my washing machine, I guess, or something, right? Or stains. Tell me a little bit about water contents.
There's a lot of different things you could test for in the drinking water that has to do more with the taste. We focus a lot on the things that really deal with your health.
Yeah.
So those would be the bacteria levels, because you can get harmful bacteria like E. coli.
Oh, sure. Oh, really? Here?
Yeah, because the water is coming from aquifers way underground. Or I guess if it's a sandpoint well, it's a shallow well, that's when you could have problems too with contamination. But another thing for health is nitrates that you would test in the water. And then arsenic is naturally occurring in the bedrock around here. It kind of just happens in different pockets in different areas. And this area is pretty high for arsenic, but there are ways, if you have high arsenic, there are ways to put filters or systems in your sink, in your kitchen, to mitigate that.
Okay.
But it's worth knowing if it's in there.
Yeah, and also lead. Is there a filter for almost any element?
Different treatment options. So lead doesn't come from the groundwater. That actually comes from the pipes in the house.
Mm.
So that would be from lead pipes or lead solder in pipes in older houses. So if you have a newer house, you know, 1990s newer, where
PEX, usually the PEX pipes.
Yeah, where it's the plastic, you know, PVC pipes. Those are probably fine. It's the older houses that the lead would be a problem. So that's a little different than, you know, arsenic comes from the groundwater, whereas lead comes from the house pipes.
Sure. Okay. And then arsenic is a natural occurring element. What does it do to you?
It just accumulates over time in your body because your body can't get rid of it. So it just accumulates over time and it can cause different issues, even cancer or kind of different toxic issues. So it's not something you would maybe notice right away. But if you drink it for, you know, many, many years, you could see health effects that are cumulative.
Okay. So do you recommend actually if I own a well to test it regularly, like every other year? How often should I test my well?
It depends on, I guess it depends on how old it is. And, you know, something like arsenic is going to be probably be there. So you could retest it. But if you're, what you'd want to do more is test your system to make sure it's working properly, because the arsenic's probably still there. So if you know, want to retest your filtering system to make sure that, so it would be an arsenic reduction
system. That needs to be maintained.
And yeah, because it does need a little maintenance, and so you want to make sure it's still working.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's, I don't know. But it's a topic because there's a lot of people living off a well. Okay.
A lot of lake people too.
Yeah,
having wells.
Yeah, that's true. So, what else does RMB do? So, you test commercially, I guess. You said bigger fluids, but for the consumer, any other water testing I can do as a consumer that I don't know of?
We can also do so in lakes. We'll talk about the lakes program in a little bit, but. There are other kind of side things you can do too, like we can test for algae toxins. So if you get a big algae bloom where the water just turns really green, you know, sometimes you hear about it being toxic to pets, you know, dogs or people if they are in it or drinking that. So we can test for algae. We can also identify invasive species that are in the water, so zebra mussels.
Okay.
Their baby zebra mussels are called veligers, and they're so small you have to look under a microscope.
Oh, really?
So we can look at water under a microscope to see if there's zebra mussels in there. Hmm. We do that on many lakes in Minnesota as well. So those are kind of side things that aren't necessarily part of our regular lakes program, but things that people are also interested in and are doing in Minnesota.
So that lake program that was started 20 years ago, let's speak about that. What is it? What does it contain? What's the goal?
Yeah, so it's a way to for people that live on the lake to monitor their lake over time. Really, the question I get most when I tell people I'm a lake biologist is, so how are our lakes doing?
Okay.
And you can't just answer that blanket statement, really. I mean, I guess you can maybe regionally, but you need to have the data or the information there about the lake to know. And each lake is different, too. And if you monitor the lake year after year, you can compare year to year to see if it's getting better, see if it's getting worse, or just see if it's stable, which is good, too.
So
our lakes program is a way for people that live on the lake to get involved. We train them to collect the water sample. So a volunteer is actually out on the lake taking the sample. They bring it to our laboratory. We test the water for, they do three things. One thing they do when they're out in the boat, they test for the water clarity.
Okay.
Using a Secchi disc, which is a big round metal white disc on a rope. Sounds really basic, but they've been using it for so many years. And it has, on the rope, there are different
measures.
Foot markings. So what they do is drop that disc off the side of the boat and count how many feet down they can see it till it disappears. And that's the, you know,
clarity.
10 feet or clarity or whatever would be the measure for that. So it's very simple, but it's a very effective measurement. And then they collect a water sample, and we test that for two things. We test it for phosphorus, which is the main nutrient in the lakes that feeds the plants and the algae in the lakes. So usually the more phosphorus is in a lake, the greener it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also test for, the name of it is chlorophyll A, but what that is the pigment in algae that makes them green. So we're really testing how green the water is.
Mm.
And that's all, those three things are related to each other, because if you get more phosphorus in the water, that's that food for the algae, so then you get greener water, and when the water gets greener, the clarity gets worse.
Sure.
So all three of those act together, and that's the main backbone of the water monitoring program, and that's really the basic way to monitor lakes anywhere. It's other organizations besides us do those same tests, like the state, the DNR, and the Pollution Control Agency too. So then after they collect the samples, we run the tests, then we post the data to an online database where anyone from the lake can go look up the results. They don't have to have a printout on paper that they have to copy and pass around. Anyone can look at the results from any lakes in our program.
It's a public database.
It's a public database. And we also, at the end of every summer, we send all that data down to, there's a big statewide Minnesota database housed in at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And all the data from all the monitoring in the state goes down to that one place too, so that they can use it for statewide planning and statewide reports. So what's really neat is that the volunteers on the lake are contributing data that's being used for statewide lake reports and projects. One of the things to note would be, so Governor Mark Dayton of Minnesota right now is doing a big push for water programs and improving water in the next 25 years. And so, you know, this data can be used for that.
As a great value to what you have been doing for the past 20 years.
Yeah,
and the volunteers.
And it's really based on the for the volunteers.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. How many lakes are you testing?
Yeah, so over the past 20 years of the program, we've worked with over 1,000 lakes in Minnesota. Probably annually, we're working with about 500 or so.
Wow.
Around the state of Minnesota. And so we work with all the volunteers and the lake associations, and we usually do, in the spring, we do one training per county, so we try and get everyone together within one county to come together for the training at the beginning of the year and distribute all their supplies. So it's kind of a network from mm-hmm. that.
So your network is growing, so every year you gain more lakes?
Yeah, and we really have people all over the state, too. I mean, we have, so some people, you know, around here, people can drive their samples into our laboratory, but we work with lakes south of the Twin Cities metro really? Area that ship up their samples with different shipping companies. The people over in the Arrowhead, you know, northeast Minnesota. So we are getting samples from all over the whole state, not just this immediate area.
And that started 20 years ago, so we have 20 years of records.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get asked, how are our lakes doing? So you can actually really fall back. You can ask, like, which one are you looking at?
Yeah.
Or which area?
Mm-hmm.
Do you analyze and do you actually write an annual report too? Like an analysis, hey, in the northeast of the state or southwest? Because data collecting is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess data analyzing and coming to a conclusion actually makes some measures or like
yeah.
recommendations. Like, hey, in the southwest of Minnesota, a lot more phosphorus, a lot more nutrients, a lot more green, maybe too much fertilizer. We could actually,
yeah.
right? Is it the value of those data, is it being used?
Yes. So because we share that data with the statewide database, they are using that in those reports that they do. But we also do reports for lakes, or we do a summary on a countywide basis. But the really neat feature of our website is where you look up the data, you can also, there's different options that will generate a graph for you, and we'll do that statistical trend analysis, which is how you ask the data if it's, you know, improving or declining or staying the same. So there's actually an option on our website called trend analysis where you can choose your lake and it'll run that analysis for you for no extra cost on the website. And then people can call us and we can walk them through it too. But
trends but not in the future, in the past.
In the past. So this would be answering, so when you want to answer that question of is the lake getting better or worse or the same, what you do is take the, we like to have at least 8 years of data in a row to answer that question because there can be different wet years, dry years, you know, early ice out, late ice out. So if you look over about an 8 to 10 year period, that kind of evens those things out.
Uh-huh.
And we do a statistical trend analysis. We run some statistics on the data to see if it's improving or declining or stable. And we have that calculator actually on our website.
Okay, so there are so many environmental variables, like early ice out and what you just said. So we could have peak years, which actually over a statistical period have no say. It's just a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah, because you can get some years are going to, like this year wasn't real hot up here. You know, some of the lakes never, the temp of the water never got over, you know, 80 degrees. It was... I don't know if we had any days in the 90s, maybe that first weekend in June, but so different summers, you know, have different weather conditions, and then, but yeah, over a longer period of time, you kind of look past that.
Mm-hmm.
So the lakes that have been monitoring for 20 years,
yeah,
which are actually a lot of the lakes, Otter Tail County lakes started 20 years ago, so a lot of the big lakes around, you know, Pahrump, Fergus Falls, Detroit Lakes area have been monitoring for 20 years. So you can actually answer those questions on how the lake's doing.
Yeah.
Which is neat.
It is. Do you have like an example of like a popular lake in our area, Detroit or Big Cormorant or Otter Tail? Do you recall any statistical data?
Yeah, I'm trying to think here because I have looked at all those ones.
Is there any particular lake that sparks your...
Pelican is improving in water quality.
Really?
Now it's had zebra mussels for since 2009, but I've been working with Pelican Lake.
But zebra mussels clean the water.
They filter it. Yeah, they make it more clear.
Yeah.
That lake was actually improving before zebra mussels too, which is good. And you know, some of that was probably, so everything travels downstream. Water runs downhill.
Of course.
Right? So Pelican Lake is downstream from Detroit Lakes, the city. So Detroit Lake flows into Sally, which flows into Melissa, which flows into Little Pelican, which flows into Big Pelican, then down to Lizzie, and down the way. So, when the city of Detroit Lakes put in their wastewater treatment and city sewer around Detroit Lake, you know, it not only improved the water quality of Detroit Lake, but it improved all the lakes downstream for
it too.
So that's really interesting.
When was that?
It was before I moved here, so I'm...
In the 90s?
It was before 10 years ago. It was longer ago than that, I think.
Yeah. But 80s, 90s.
Yeah, and so right now Detroit Lakes is in the process of, they're going to do a big upgrade of their wastewater treatment plant, which will probably help improve lakes
even more. Huh. Mm-hmm. So one good example is Pelican Lake that you can recall. And maybe you just mentioned zebra mussels. Tell us a little bit about zebra mussels, if you can. Because everybody says negative, I can cut my feed, but they actually filters, are they not?
Yeah, so remember how I said those three things go together, so the clarity, the phosphorus and the algae levels go together. But when you have zebra mussels, it kind of breaks that connection, because the zebra mussels filter, what they do is eat the algae. So they filter the water, make it more clear, but they don't do anything to change the phosphorus level in the lake, the nutrient level. They're just clearing out the water column. So the first thing that people see after a couple years of zebra mussels is because they're sitting on the bottom and then they're producing waste down at the bottom, which has nutrients, phosphorus in it, a lot of times what you'll see is a more clear in the water, but then on the bottom of the lake there's like the long stringy kind of algae that they don't eat, like that green hairy stuff on the rocks. So they kind of change the system a little bit. And they, but they also down the road, you know, they compete with the they compete with food or take away the food for the little critters that the small fish eat. So, you know, over time they could actually affect fisheries up the food chain in a lake. But that, so that takes a little bit longer, and our lakes haven't been infested long enough probably to know.
What I once heard or read, that actually zebra mussels will also disappear again, right? There's like a whole cycle. They come and then they change the lake in a way like you just described, but then they die off again too? Is that true?
Yeah, so once they get to a certain level, once they've spread throughout the whole lake, and that usually takes two, three years, then they, if there's so many of them, and this did happen in Pelican Lake a couple of years ago where they ate all the algae, and, you know, we were monitoring the algae concentration. It was pretty much nothing. There's gone.
Really?
So what they did was eat themselves out of food. So then, you know, a bunch of them are going to die because they ran out of food because they ate it all.
Really?
And then, but they don't all die. And then the ones that survive, now then the food, you know, comes back. And then the ones that survived, now they have all the food to themselves. So then they
peak again.
So it kind of does the up and down.
Sinus.
And Pelican has been seeing that, where some years they see more, some years they see less. And they also have different preference for different areas in the lake, so they're not always going to be on every, you know, covering every dock. What we found on Pelican Lake is that they really like the east end where the river comes in, and maybe that's because the river's bringing in food, you know. So
that's most populated?
With zebra mussels, yeah.
In that area?
A lot of them, and they grow really big.
Like right how big?
Well, big for them isn't like an inch. So
that's big?
Yeah. So not as big as the, like, the native mussels or big clams that people see. But,
What else does phosphorus do? Or where's phosphorus? Actually, we had Mr. Alcott here from the Watershed District in our interview. And he spoke about phosphorus. It's an, it comes through the atmosphere and the rainwater, and it washes into the lake. And that's why we actually need to have the rain kind of filter through, like don't wash into the lake, because the phosphorus needs to filter through the earth and plants. So phosphorus, is it only producing, is it doing anything good to the water too? Or like what's phosphorus for else?
It's just, it's really just... you know, I guess good would be a, it depends on what you want, you know. It is going to make the water more green, but it also provides more food for fish and things living in the water. So, and really, that's why, you know, on a really deep, clear, rocky lake, you know, it's not going to be as like a walleye lake, because there's just not enough food or nutrients in that lake. For
so
that type of, so it depends on how you like to use the lake. Do you want to, you know, a clear, deep lake for swimming, or, you know, more like Boundary Waters type thing? Or do you like to fish? Or you know, on a shallow lake, you're watching ducks and geese and swans, maybe, and wildlife. So a lot of people kind of think good and bad in terms of probably, you know, swimming, water skiing, recreation. But not all things are good for different uses of the lake. You know, so if you're fishing, or, you know, if you're bass fishing or pan fishing, you actually want, you got to fish in a place where there's aquatic plants, and you need the phosphorus as the nutrient or the food for those plants. So you do need phosphorus there to feed those plants for the cover for the fish.
So a healthy balance, as always,
yes,
right?
Yep.
So we actually
in moderation.
Yeah, in moderation. Yeah,
everything in moderation.
Okay. Yeah, not only for us, but also for the lake. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But humans, we change the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Where, so even if humans weren't here, you know, weren't here right now or didn't settle here, there would still be, when it rains, you know, there'd be a little bit of soil washing into the lake, naturally.
Sure.
But what humans do when we come in is we change the landscape around the lake, where the water washes off a lot faster than it would if we weren't here, you know, because we're adding concrete and patios and driveways and roofs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes that water run off faster, and then that those nutrients go right in instead of filtering through, kind of like what Brent probably talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just good for people to be mind. I think just being mindful of that is good to keep in mind, you know, for people.
Yeah, anything you change has an impact on the lake, and so you're part of it. So I think, I hope most people respect that. There's always like, hey, this little shed, but it's always like this one shed. Well, if 100 people put that little shed up, 8 by 10, we have 80 square feet times 100.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we have 8,000 square feet of water that just rushes into it. Like, it has a huge impact.
Yeah, it's cumulative. Mm-hmm. Every little thing adds up. That's why every little rain garden or shoreline buffer with plants that people put in, and the more people do that, that adds up in a good way, you know, too. So, but, you know, in the 1970s, the Clean Water Act really eliminated all those straight pipe sewers into the lake, where, you know, cities used to just pump the sewage right into the lakes because we didn't know, you know. So all of those kind of quick fixes are fixed now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're dealing with all these little cumulative
things
that are harder to, a little harder to fix, a little harder to see a change, but you can over time as those add up.
So looking at the past 40 years, we have made big improvements already, and now we are really trying to go perfect?
Yeah, or things have changed too. You know, people have a lot bigger houses now than they used to.
That's true.
a lot bigger houses than they used to, a lot bigger boats, motors than they used to, you know, a lot bigger garages because they have more cars and more bigger cars. And so, yeah, I think the cumulative things have probably increased, but those, you know, those straight pipe pollution has been fixed, which is good.
Talking about boats, actually, that's never a topic here. What kind of impact does all that, not only the propeller or like the motion, I'm talking about the exhaust, like, because it's exhausted into the water, kind of like, I have an old boat. What does it actually do? Because I, tell me, like, how bad is it? Or like, because what does it do?
It just depends on what kind of, like an older two-stroke motor probably is less efficient, so it's going to have more
oil.
Yeah, going
waste
into the lake. And oil can change. So if it's oil, it kind of depends on what it is. If it's an oil slick on top of the lake, that affects the surface tension of the lake. So if you think about, like, water bugs, those ones that slide around on the top of the lake, when there's oil there, they sink in because it breaks that surface tension. That's how they stay up.
Yeah.
So it could affect, you know, plants and aquatic life. But really, what kind of the biggest impact from big motors is when you have these huge motors in shallow areas, and, you know, you rev it and you see the cloudy, you see the lake bottom coming up to the top. So all the phosphorus, a lot of the phosphorus in the lake is sitting down at the bottom in that sediment. So when you stir it up, and you bring that phosphorus up to the top, it will feed the algae that's on the top, and you could get greener water that way. It's like kind of like a little recipe for more green.
So in the end, it's also algae again.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And the exhaust, does that combine with the water at all, or does it just go in the atmosphere? Like, does it get? I don't know.
I'm not sure on that. I don't know as much about the exhaust.
Well, I don't know. I'm just wondering why
I
have you here.
Something to look into. Yeah.
Well, circling back to the database real quick, where do I find the database on the internet? We'll put a link up, but what is it?
Oh, yeah. So our website is rmbel.info.
Okay.
And if you click on, in the top navigation bar, there's one of them is Lakes Program. So if you click on that, that'll bring you to the page where's the database and other information.
Okay, so we will put a post up on lakelifeweekend.com, a link, and then that database is easy, pretty intuitive. I can have I have a drop down, and I can select my lake, and then I can just go back in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep, it's a drop down list. You choose your county, and then you choose your lake name, and then. And there's a few different reporting options. So one is just a one-page summary of kind of all the information about the lake.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is where you can actually pull up all the past data on that lake. One of them, you can make graphs, like I said. And then the other one is that trend analysis where you can say, you know, ask if the lake's getting better or worse over time, and it will generate that for you.
Is there also, if people are intrigued and want to add, contribute, volunteer, is there like a info contact option to get a hold of you if they want to add their lake to the list?
Yes. Yep.
So there's a contact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. There's contact on that Lakes Program page.
Okay.
Yep. You'll see my picture there.
Yeah. Well, good. Very interesting. I think a great program. Established volunteering from Robert, right? Just to contribute to the water quality and environment? Or he had other intentions? No, he just did
it? No, he just wanted to help the lakes learn about their lakes, yeah.
How many programs are there? You said you cover 1,000 in the database total and regularly 500. Yeah, the train here. And then how many organizations statewide? We have 11,241 lakes or something like that.
Yeah, so we work with, most of the lakes that we work with have associations, so we probably work with 400 or 500 different.
No, groups. And is there other RMBs like laboratories that do similar things?
Not really, not like ours. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has a volunteer lake monitoring program that's just the Secchi Disc, just the Clarity.
Okay.
And we actually work with them because sometimes people will do one spot on the lake, they'll do our program, and then another spot they'll do just the Clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of help them do both of those. There are some other labs that do something similar, but it's not a whole program like we do. It's more of a not doing the training, and then the results interpretation with it.
Okay.
So we kind of have our own little niche with that lakes monitoring program in the state.
Huh. Yeah, fascinating.
That's fun.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful contribution. So I'm glad we learned about it. I'm glad people can contribute to it and also can take knowledge out of it. So yeah, thank you very much for coming and all
Thanks.
That insight. And maybe have you back in a year to talk some other water issues or not issues.
Yeah, thanks.
Solutions.
Sounds good.
Thank you again.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com, and if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com, and you have a wonderful weekend ahead.